Straighten up, Marnie. We've got stuff to talk about.
I'm ready, guys. Hi. How are you?
Them or me?
Everyone.
Hi.
Everyone involved.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a weird start. But, hey, here we are. And but, hey, our start was not as bad as North Melbourne's against Brisbane in Gather Round.
Yes.
Which is going to be a fun podcast. Now, we're not going to – this is going to be a little bit unscripted.
We're doing something a bit different today, guys. Josh and I had a chat before we jumped on air and we both agree that no one needs to relive the game against Brisbane from Gather Round. None of – you know, we personally don't want to do it. I'm sure you guys probably don't want to listen to us banging on about every mistake we made because there was plenty of them. So we're going to do things a little bit differently today. We probably will touch on the game a little bit. Obviously, there were some things, believe it or not, some positive things that we can talk about that came from the game. But I guess more we just kind of want to take a step back and kind of reflect on the opening month of footy and probably look maybe 12 months earlier and a little bit more into the future and just sort of discuss where the club's at as a whole at the moment, because I think we probably speak on behalf of most supporters. We're sick to death of the inconsistency and I think a lot of supporters are starting to feel a little bit fed up. It may seem premature because we're only four rounds into the season, but this has been going on for the last four seasons or so now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we just sort of thought that, you know, we always have a lot of thoughts about a lot of different things going on at the club and, you know, I'm sure we can speak to how a lot of supporters might be feeling and maybe also provide some different opinions and perspectives.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is going to be a little bit – it's almost like a little bit of a detox – for me and for you, just to talk about how we're feeling. And like you said,
I think,
you know, I've always wanted the podcast to be a representation of what the fans are thinking as a whole and a little bit of an outlet, you know, for you guys to speak and, you know, have your voice heard with the messages and, you know, we'll hopefully get back to doing more Q&As eventually. There's just so much to talk about. But, yeah, it's basically just going to be how we're feeling about where we're at. A realistic expectation, but, you know, on the good and the bad side of things.
100%.
How long is it going to be until we can expect improvement, and how is it fair that we have to have sat through 4-5 years and we feel like we're maybe only just starting to fix things? So, look, we'll talk about the game a little bit. What was it, 42 points we scored to 112, Norwood Oval in Gather Round. So we started incredibly flat. There was no bite, no effort, and just lack of intensity from the first bounce.
Yeah.
And it was really disappointing to see. The first quarter, I'll see if it gives me the stats here. I've got the app in front of us. Yeah, so it was 45-12 basically at quarter time and the game was done. You know, anything can happen, but with the way our team has been the last 4-5 years, it was done. There are positives to take. We did win the third quarter, which I don't think is good enough still, and that's something that what I'm trying to figure out in my brain is that is a positive, yes, but at the end of the day, we still got smashed. And
you can't show up at, you know, after half time, we're already 10 goals down at that point just about, and then decide to show up and win the third quarter. I mean, that's absolutely unacceptable.
Absolutely. You know, we battled in that third and I did notice after half time the effort was better. We'll never know what Clarkson said or changed, but how we're getting things so wrong and then – look, we would have lost regardless, but like we looked, the intensity was there. The tackling pressure was better in the second half. And why can't we do that from the first bounce?
It kind of, and I don't know if this is true, so I'm just sort of trying to, you know, put pieces together. I mean, Brisbane obviously came into this game. They hadn't won a game yet either.
Yes.
We did speak to Loz during the week and I said on that preview podcast that I thought this would be a 10-goal loss at least.
True.
You can't.
It was exactly. It was 10 goals. Oh, no, it was more because I kicked a lot of points.
It was
6 goals to 16
was,
goals, but 70
points, unfortunately. 70 points. So it was more than 10
Five
goals.
5 points better than last year, though. We're slowly improving.
Wow. Well, how's that for a silver lining, guys?
That's where we're at, Marnie.
Oh, God, help me. But it's like, you know, we've got to go into that game we're still way underdogs. Like, oh, forget the last four, you know, forget Brisbane's start to the season. I mean, they were in a grand final, like, you know,
yes,
7 months ago, 8 months ago, to come out and just to not even give a whimper from the word go was incredibly disappointing.
Joe Danaher took 12 marks. Now, I'm just looking here. Like you were saying, Brisbane were out of form, but some, like, Eric Hipwood was chronically out of form. You're welcome, Loz, as well, for playing your team back into form. If you make the grand final again, I expect to thank you, as
it's
long
all,
as Marnie
it's
as
all
well.
North. It's all North.
It's all North, and I think they should probably give us the cup as well because we basically played them back into form.
Sounds fair, doesn't
it? He was chronically out of form, 3 goals, 2, had 2 shots within the first, like, 5 minutes of the game. Danaher taking 12 marks. Danaher's a good player. 5 goals, 4, could have been 9. We know his kicking woes are real, but – you know, looking at disposal, McCluggage really killed us. Dunkley, Zorka, I mean, you know, we look at our stats here and you've got Sheezer with 35 and then it drops instantly to 25 and it just dies from there. So, you know, stats-wise, it was pretty poor. Now, something I'm going to read out here just to kick it off, and we're going to, like we said, this is going to be a little bit more unscripted, a little bit less structured, but it's going to be us sort of venting our different concerns, and we are going to talk about some positives and things as well.
Definitely.
So stay tuned. One thing I wanted to talk about was the disposal efficiency. Now, this is an individual players. Let's talk about individual players first, and maybe then we go to the club. Maybe that's
okay.
A good way to
that's
do it.
That's a good way. We're flipping it.
So I would suggest, and I'm no footballer, you'd want to be maybe 70 to 75% minimum disposal efficiency.
Yeah,
okay?
I'd say so.
So here's some of the names that were under 75% disposal efficiency. So Tom Powell, who fought hard but I don't think had a great game. No one did, to be fair, except for a couple which we'll talk about in the Sean Attlee Club Champ. But Tom Powell, 70 or 71% disposal efficiency, nearly 72. 71% disposal efficiency. Zerha, 69%. We'll give Dersmer a break. He's a young guy. I'm just going to read out some players who need to be better. Dylan Stevens, who got subbed, 5 touches, I think, for the game, who's been incredibly underwhelming. Someone I'll continue to back, but, you know, got to be realistic as well. 60% disposal efficiency. These are the ones that concern me. Bailey Scott, 52% disposal efficiency.
That's horrific.
Luke Davies-Uniacke, also 52% disposal efficiency.
Yeah.
Which is criminal. Colby McKercher went at 46.2%. Now, young kid, four games in. Don't blame him for a second about what happened yesterday. But a player of his skill level going at 46.2%, disposal efficiency is wild. He's a victim of the rest of our team being yuck because he is young and it's not his fault at all. But Paul Curtis, 20%. disposal efficiency. He's had a fantastic year, Paul Curtis. I think Paul Curtis got 5 possessions.
He did.
That means one of his possessions
that's
went to the team.
Grim. Yeah.
One.
That's grim.
And he kicked a great goal. And
that was probably his one effective possession.
But I don't blame Curtis. Larky was at 50% disposal efficiency. Not that we need him for that, but, you know, I don't blame Larky and Curtis at all. The forward 50 entry was deplorable. Once again,
we've spoken about this before. It's been an age-old issue for years now. Our delivery into the forward 50 is harrowing. It's actually quite scary,
and
to be
yesterday
honest.
There was many clearances that we won and we had enough time, but the players panic, especially guys like LDU, who I think has had a bit of an underwhelming start this year. He's had great moments. In the Carlton game, he had a good second half. Fremantle, he was good, but I didn't think defensively he was good enough. But he got a couple of clearances against Brisbane and did not even consider looking up to see if Sheezer was running past, to see if Bailey Scott's on the wing, Darcy Tucker plays the wing now apparently. Like, where you're not even looking. He's meant to be our best midfielder, and the amount of times he's looking at the ground and he just sent that ball as far as he could is not good enough.
Something I've noticed with LDU, and I don't mean to bag him out, because I think one of the issues for him is I think he shoulders a very, very big load.
100%. And can I just say really quickly, this is not meant to target any players.
No.
And this isn't, this is,
it's
not.
It's just a general discussion.
It's a general discussion
of what
about
what we've observed over the past
100%. And yeah. these are players we support, most of them. And, you know, we want to be really, really good. We're just pointing out how some of these players have started. We're not saying we don't like any of these players and we're not trying to criticize them. But as fans, I think it's fair enough for us to be frustrated with how we've started this year. There's a flip side to that, which I'll talk about how I feel on the other side to maybe make it more positive. But I think it's fair to say that the effort and the output of what we've been doing is not good enough.
I don't think that anyone should be sitting here at the end of any game and questioning our effort or our intent or our heart and soul. And that is the biggest issue that I take away from the game.
Well, that's
Brisbane.
What I was going to say. Like the first half, I think that was the only time this year I felt like they didn't care.
Because if you rock up week in, week out and you throw everything you've got at it, and I think there are players that do that week in, week out, but if you have, you know, as a team, if we throw everything we've got at the opposition and we're not good enough, then it's not acceptable. I don't want to say that because I've said multiple times on this podcast and other podcasts that I don't accept honourable losses. But if you throw everything you have at it and you fall short, okay, it is what it is. You just pick up the pieces and you move on to next week. Yeah. But for a club that's in a rebuilding phase and that's looking to move up the ladder in the next few
seasons.
Effort
needs to be the bare minimum.
The effort needs to be there and the intent needs to be there. You need to be hungry. You need to throw everything that you have. Mm. When it comes to LDU, I think that he definitely is carrying a lot and he's shouldering a huge load. Now, whether that's something he's taking on upon himself, whether he doesn't trust his teammates with the ball in hand, like I don't know, but there are so many times where I've looked at LDU and selfish probably isn't the right word, but I've looked at LDU and rather than, as you said, Josh, looking for another option, looking for a teammate to link up with, he's trying to do too much on his own and so often he gets caught, he's holding the ball, he runs into trouble. Why this group just doesn't look like they are playing currently as a team. Mm. Now, I don't know if that's because they're still trying to gel as a team. We've said before the last few weeks, you know, there are a lot of new faces in there and everyone's probably trying to figure out each other's groove and probably figuring out how to play as a team. But why he doesn't look for his teammates and trust his teammates to help shoulder the load is kind of worrying to me.
Yeah, I feel the same about Cam Zerha. And, you know, he, against Carlton, had, especially in the first quarter, had some incredibly selfish moments.
Mm-hmm.
I am not saying this is how they feel, but from a fan and supporter's viewpoint, looking at these guys play.
Well, that's all we kind of have to go off at the moment.
That's all we've got to go off. And once again, this is not my opinion of how they think. This is what I feel like. I don't think they trust their teammates. And those two have been here about the same amount of time. They have had to go through a lot,
yep.
A lot of really poor football, seeing a lot of their mates come and go, not getting rewarded for effort in the past. And I'm not necessarily blaming them for maybe not feeling the passion like we want them to and like we do as supporters. But those two guys who can be great footballers just don't seem to trust their teammates. Zerha, you know, I think gave up a very simple holding the ball. He got the ball a little overlapping handball in like the third or fourth quarter. And instead of trying to find his teammates, he just rid the tackle and got holding the ball. LDU's doing this out of the center as well. Instead of trying to link up per se, he's trying to do a lot of it by himself. And
yeah.
I don't blame those players because do they have the players around them that they can trust? Probably not.
Yeah.
But that's not the mentality you're meant to go in with. And once again, I'm not saying that's how they feel, but from a fan's perspective, someone who loves this team and watches every week, I don't feel like they trust their teammates and they're connected with it fully.
And that's a big problem because on the flip side, it's a good mentality to have because they clearly care about the success of the team to actually want to take ownership and responsibility
yes.
to win games.
I don't doubt their commitment.
So that's great.
Yeah.
But they need to – but this is a team sport.
Yeah.
And there are 23 players that pull on that jumper every single week and they all should be able – the best teams are when the bottom six players on the field are stepping up and performing well.
Yeah, that's very, very true. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword there where I think they need to look for their team more and get involved with team passages of play. But I also know that they're two of the more talented players on our team And if the talent and the help around them isn't good enough, then we can't blame them for doing those things. So there's two sides to this sword here. But that's just how we feel.
But I think there is talent around them. Maybe there's not talent, not every single player is a superstar, and I'm not shying away from that. But LDU,
but it's and talent Zerha, until it's talent until it's not. And this is, it's talent right now, but the talent needs to become a great AFL player, and that's what they don't have yet. They don't have solid, good, above average to great AFL players around them in their primes. They've got talented kids, which we're all excited about.
But so then bring them in on the game. Yeah. Rather than trying to, you know, take it all on yourself, bring them into the game, because there are guys who are capable of playing their role.
Mm.
You know, I mean, George Wardlaw's had played a handful of games and he's one of the most talented players on the side.
Yeah,
on the list. Absolutely. Harry Sheasel is more than proven as well. Yeah.
But then you can look at someone like Wardlaw, who I thought was one of the more disappointing on the ground yesterday, and we know how I love George Wardlaw, and my love for him hasn't wavered. But he was really poor yesterday. He wasn't getting around the ball. His effort was there, and I'll never question that man's effort. But
that's a positive at least.
He got 11 touches the whole game. I didn't see him for basically half the game.
Yeah.
And that's a player who, rightly or wrongly, we rely on to, you said, be a barometer for this team.
Definitely.
And he's 19, and we're relying on a 19-year-old to be a barometer. Why aren't we relying on LDU for that? Because I don't think I would. I don't think LDU is going to break open a game by himself. Maybe he's done it a few times. Yes, last year he had these games where we were like, wow, but I feel like it's been a long time since we've had one of those from him. And, yeah, is it passion for the team? Is it it's a contract year for him, I think, as well. You know, is his head here? Is it not? Once again, I'm not trying to speculate and say ifs, buts and maybes, but from a fan's point looking in, the body language maybe needs to improve and the communication needs to improve. Now, I think there's a little segue there into Charlie Comben, which, if we want to talk about a positive really quickly.
He was so good against Brisbane.
He was so good. And the interview he did after the game, which I watched last night, but you watched before, he said some things I've been critical of feeling like this week. I haven't said on the podcast, but the communication from this club isn't good enough. We've sat here for 5 years now and watching rubbish football. Mediocre would be great. Like garbage football.
Yeah.
And as a fan base, to turn up every week, to podcast every week, to, you know, go to the games, pay the money, get the memberships for those who do, we're not getting – there's no reward for effort, investment, or anything like that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So the least I think that we should expect is communication. Now, the things I want to know – the main thing I'd love to know if Clarkson, if you're watching, mate.
I'm sure he is.
Is this what you thought it would be? Is this where you thought we were at? I know in press conferences we only get media-tilted press conferences. And he's always saying the same things. We're going to learn a lot. This young group, we got to be patient. Yeah, we get that, mate. But it's not good enough.
No,
and
it's
that's
not.
And we're and as fans, we're entitled to feel that way and be critical. But is this what he thought it would be? Is this as bad as he thought we were? Because we didn't think we were going to be this bad now. So is he steering the ship? Does he know where we're at? I'm not doubting him because look what his success has been. But this is the thing, the biggest thing I would like to be communicated to the fans is this what you expected? Are we still on track or is it way worse than he assumed it was and we're floundering? Because it feels like we're floundering this year.
I think the tide can turn really quickly, and I don't want to make excuses for the team, but we are only at the end of round four.
Well, this is the point we'll get to. Let's just finish about Chom, actually, okay. And then we'll go on to that. Because that is a massive talking point that I want to talk about when we're going to flip this. And there are things I feel really positive about.
Okay,
well.
Let's talk about Charlie. We love you, Charlie.
Charlie Comben is the podcast's number one favorite. And he coming back after a year, you know, if you guys haven't watched the interview after the game he did, go and watch it and just send him some praise and tell him how great he is, because the way he spoke, you could see
very refreshing, and it means something to him.
You could
as well.
See he was devastated. He was the guy I was interviewing was saying, putting a couple of positives in front of him. He goes, "Yeah, but it's not good enough." And he goes, "You know, he got 8 marks and 25 touches or something like that. And he goes, yeah, but I only had a good half. And that's exactly what I want to hear from some of these players. I want to know that they know. I want to know that they care. And I'm not – everyone's got different body language, you know. I'm not expecting everyone to come out and be maybe as open as Chom can be in interviews and things like that. But I think it was exactly the interview that I needed to feel better about after the game. And his performance alone, like, yes, he didn't have the best first half. I think he fell behind on a few leads from Danaher. There's a few times Danaher had a mark and then all of a sudden he'd run into frame and, you know, like, where are you, mate? Like, aren't you bodying him the whole time? But it's his first game back and he's playing a new position. What did he get? 8 marks in the end? So what have I got? I've got up here. He's involved intercept possessions, 13. He was involved with 13 intercepts.
Yeah.
That's insane. Yeah. You know, like, have we got contested marks up here?
Contested marks, yeah. 3 marks.
Three contested marks.
That was a team high.
Yeah, which is a team high. You know, his size and how quick he was. He ran someone down for holding the ball. You know, his effort is unmatched. And it's about time we have some players whose effort is like Kane Turner's, but they've got the skill of a really good footballer. And it's rare in this club to have people like that. And look, Tom's got a lot to prove. He would be the first to admit that. But the things that he showed yesterday in that team were fantastic. And he was my man of the match just for what he did.
You want to talk about effort?
Well, okay. Well,
we're going to go to the other side of the ground now.
Well, let's talk about a huge talking point, Marnie, if you see what I
actually thought that Hugh Greenwood's game was – it was okay. He was okay against Brisbane in terms of like the output. He kicked a really nice goal. That was at a time we probably really needed it in the second quarter. We just needed someone to get us going. Hugh Greenwood is one of the best leaders that we have at this football club.
I could not agree more with that. And he to me was also one of the best on the ground.
He had 7 tackles. He only had a handful of touches. He obviously kicked a nice goal. He was pinch hitting in the ruck a little bit. But you can never ever question the effort and the intent of that man.
Yep.
He was in the middle of everything.
Started up forward, second half went into the midfield.
He actually just never let the ball out of his sight.
And no.
At 32 years of age, he is just –
It's the effort. Now, look, this from a non – someone not quite as biased on Hugh – not biased, but like you know, I don't have the
– I just don't think you can leave him if his effort is standard week in, week out, everyone played with that same effort week 100%. In, week out, these results would be looking – a lot different.
No, I agree. Hugh Greenwood was arguably for me, when I was doing my Sean Attlee Club Champ votes, he's going to be in there. And not because he had the flashiest game, not because he had the most possessions. His effort, look at the smile on your face, Marnie.
I love
you're,
this
you're
so
a nut
much.
Job. You're an absolute nuffy. So I'm serious though. What did we say on the podcast last week? Hugh Greenwood in this mid, we lack toughness. We lack composure. We lack a big body who will tackle, who will get on the bottom
of
the pack.
He's just so ferocious.
And he'll rip the ball out.
Yeah.
Yes, and LDU does not do that. Tom Powell, maybe one day, he's young, he doesn't do that. Wardlaw can do that. The dude's played like 11 games. So having a veteran in the middle was so much better. He was so tough and so willing to dive in and get the ball for us. Did it always work? No. Was he stats-wise one of the best players in the game? No, but it's the effort he puts in.
And, it's the hunger and the drive.
Because no one else had that.
It's the heart and the soul.
Yes.
And it's above all for me, and I think this probably summarizes the club at the moment for me, is that Hugh Greenwood has resilience and very few other players in this side do.
Yeah.
Because we have been battered and bruised for the last 4 seasons to a point where mentally we look weak and we just can't seem to get ourselves going. I said to you before we jumped on air that it just – from the word go, it just didn't really seem like we were in this game whatsoever. And it almost feels like we didn't really give ourselves a chance at all. And that is just, you have to go into every game thinking you can win. Everyone told me I was mad last week saying, oh, I think we can beat Carlton on Good Friday. But I actually believe that what this team is capable of is matching it with some of the best sides in the competition. And the proof's in the pudding. We challenged Carlton pretty well. We challenged Fremantle the week before. We challenged GWS at times. You know, this game's the outlier. So far this season, now, yes, this game might have been something we were used to 2 years ago under David Noble, but for me, this game is the outlier. And that's what makes it so frustrating, is because how can we take one step forward and two steps back?
Yes, it definitely did feel like that. One thing I'll point out, which is body language again, and once again, this is not – well, this is probably the most disappointing play on the ground, and I'll talk about Aiden Corr compared to Hugh Greenwood. At the end of the game, when the siren went, they filmed two players – okay. The first thing Aiden Corr did was go up to Joe Danaher, give him a hug and start laughing with him. And I know that they might be mates. I understand that, you know, it's not – we shouldn't all be serious and blah, blah, blah. It's just not what I want to see from someone in our leadership group. They instantly switched to Hugh Greenwood and his face was devastated.
Yeah.
He was staring into the oblivion and looked devastated with what had just happened to this team. And that says a lot to me. You know, we Aiden Corr – I've had my beef, which he doesn't know about, but I've had my issues with Aiden Corr. And, you know, I think it's all coming out in the wash a little bit, to be honest. I mean, he was, once again, I think no tackles for the second week in a row. Someone told me, I haven't even looked at that yet, but I probably should confirm that here. Let's have a look.
Yeah,
yep, none. No tackles again. No tackles 2 weeks in a row. Just appalling. And one thing we can get into quickly now, because once again, this podcast, we're jumping around a lot, our leadership group. And this is something to talk about.
I was going to say, all the leaders out there yesterday, Hugh Greenwood is the only one that stood up. McDonald missing again. Simkin missing
again.
Yes,
I was disappointed in Simkin.
Aiden Corr's had a horrific start to the year, and everyone knows how I feel about Aiden Corr, and I just think he's been probably our most disappointing player to start the season. Not good enough from Larky either. Liam Shields only played half a game, but again.
Yeah, I maybe don't feel exactly the same on Larky. Like, he's not getting any forward line help. Like, not help as in like Paul Curtis's, I understand that, but like look at what the guy has to – every single time this season, which is probably two or three times, we've kicked the ball to his leads, he marks the ball. Like he's been more of a leader this season to me than Simkin and McDonald. Simkin, I love Jai Simkin, and I'm happy with him being captain. But he was really anonymous yesterday. You sort of ran through the leadership group before, but you're right. Simkin was anonymous. I don't think it's from lack of trying. I really like Jai Simkin, and I like that he's the leader of this club. He plays every week for me, but he's also not playing in the middle. Get him in the guts. I don't know if his concussion is lingering. I don't know, but tell us. You've got Luke McDonald, who last week I thought was decent enough in his first game back. I don't think he was bad today. I just think he was anonymous. Like a lot of players, I think he took a couple of decent contested marks and always tries his heart out. But like, once again, didn't make an impact on the game. Aiden Corr is, once again, I'm not ranting about Corr like I did last year, but just can't believe he's in this team. And they've given him a leadership role with such little impact. Dropping Toby Pink over him is, what standard does that set? What standard, honestly, what standard is that? Like, well, the only reason Aiden Corr played that game is because he's in our leadership group.
Well, you know my predicament with Aiden Corr, and we've spoken about this before,
yeah,
is that his best position is as our second tall.
But if he's our second tall, our defence will never be good enough.
Well.
That's just a fact. It is.
Yeah.
It's true.
I mean, he had
– like I agree with you. Like him playing that role is the best version of him. But if we can't get that without having Chom and when Griffin Logue comes back, then it's not – what is he there for?
He isn't versatile enough. No. That's the problem with
Aiden. He did sidestep someone again on the boundary line.
You do love an Aiden Corr sidestep.
He's only there for highlights.
But the problem with Aiden Corr, and like I said, I've said this to you before, is that he plays best as our second tall defender, but – and the proof is in the pudding because the last 10 weeks of last year he was fantastic and he played really, really well once Griff went down. But his inability to adapt to that third key defender role and play it well, it's – I mean, if he can't – if that's the role and that's what we need from him and he can't give us that, then –
I don't understand how someone who's that experienced and part of our leadership group can play a third tall role on a lesser player and be worse. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah,
it's weird. It's like, why?
It's weird. And I don't, like, if you are a leader, you should be able to step up in any aspect of your game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And really, you know, take on more responsibility. And he can't. And I don't know why. But I think, again, it comes back to this whole mentality as a team. Where's the heart and soul?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And someone who's in the leadership group needs to
and
bring
where
that
is
as
that,
a bare,
like,
minimum.
And where is that and where is that team first mindset? I don't know, you said you haven't watched it during the week. I don't know if anyone who's listening watched Footy Classified during the week. And I know a lot of people hang shit on Kane Corns and don't like a lot of the things he says, and I completely understand. But he did a segment on North during the week, and it was, in my opinion, one of the better segments he's done on North. And he just said that they don't look like a team. They don't look like a united front. He pointed out when Callum Coleman-Jones went down in last week's game against Carlton, not one North player went up to him to check in and see if he was okay.
Yeah, well.
You know, and you've got I love Sonia Hood and I think she's been fantastic for the club, but posting happy snaps at halftime in a game that we ended up losing
pretty significantly.
Watch the segment. Everyone go home and after this and watch the segment, okay? But Aiden Corr's inability to adapt to a role that the team needs him to play, and someone like Cam Zerha or someone like LDU with that individual mindset rather than that team mindset is never going to do this team any good in the long term. On the flip side, I want to talk about now Angus Brayshaw. He obviously retired at the start of the season, but he did an interview not long after Melbourne won the 2021 Premiership. And he said, you know, my role now is on the wing and it's not flashy and it's a workhorse role, but I know that if I play my role well, then it will lead to team success. And that's exactly what he did. And he was such an integral part of that Premiership season. We need less players thinking about themselves and more players thinking about the team as a whole and what's going to benefit the team. I'll go back to Hugh Greenwood. He had, 12 touches and one goal. I mean, it's not a big game from him, but he was doing – it's the one percenters. It's the effort. It's the tackling. It's the pressure. It's the constant – it's the work rate. These are the things that's going to impact the team as a whole, and we just need the team to stop thinking about themselves and come together as a group and work as one. Now, whether we're going to see that in the next 6 to 8 weeks when we start to hit our straps and when we get a pretty consistent 23, there's going to be changes. It's inevitable. There are going to be players in the VFL pushing for selection. There's going to be injuries, suspensions. There'll be players out of form. But if in the next 6 to 8 weeks we don't start seeing this group playing as a whole, that is when I will seriously start to panic.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree with that. There's some massive games coming up and
there are some, and I know it probably sounds wild, but there are also some winnable games in that.
Yeah, I agree. I think what you're saying is fair about these individuals. Like Bailey Scott playing in the back line.
That's insane.
Like, but he's kicking outside of – he got the ball plenty of times from a contest. I've never seen such poor, atrocious kicking from a player who is a good player. He kicked the ball to the chest of Brisbane Lion players coming out of our back 50 probably 5 or 6 times. And not even like it was to a contest and a bad kick. It was like the Brisbane players were leading for him and he was hitting them on the chest.
That was an issue all day and they called it out multiple times on the commentary throughout the game. And it was like it's like they predicted it was that one kick, that last kick to exit our D50 was almost always turned over.
One thing that was awful on the commentary was Dermot Brereton was commentating. And he basically was able to tell us exactly what was going to happen when we were leaving our back line. He said, he said, we're going to run out of options. We're not going to look to switch or anything like that. We're going to resort to sending the ball long up the wing. And he goes, watch, and they can see it and we couldn't on the broadcast. But he goes, look, Big O has just got into position and he's going to nudge X or Larky under this contest and he's going to take an intercept mark.
Yeah.
That exactly to the T happened.
Physically and mentally, we need to be stronger.
Yeah. So Look, I guess really quickly, some other players like Dylan Stevens.
He has had a horror start to the year.
Not a good start for Dylan
Stevens. We haven't spoken about him enough, to be honest. No. To be subbed out yesterday, I think it was the right
with
move.
With 5 touches.
And it's very frustrating watching Bailey Scott have to play in the back line to put Stevens and Darcy Tucker on. I mean, that is just not working for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. Eddie Ford, I mean, once again, had moments and underdone in the preseason, but like didn't make an impact on the game. Callan Dawson fought hard all day. I think Jerry was pretty good.
I think Jerry... Okay, here's a question for you.
Yeah.
At the end of round 4, is Sherry sitting on top of our Sid Barker medal count?
No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so, no. I think...
Top 3?
Yeah, he could be top 3. I would think that Powell and Sheasel are probably there. yeah, other than that, yeah, maybe him.
Maybe top 3. Yeah. I honestly think he could be sitting in first.
He looks like maybe.
It's actually wild to say that, but I mean, good on him. Like,
yeah, look, and this is the thing with Aiden Corr and Tristan Jerry. They were the two people last year that everyone knows me to hate, right? I've done a turn on Tristan Jerry, and that is great because I always wanted him to be good.
Yeah,
but
I think he's
nothing I said about him last year was wrong, by the way, as well.
He didn't have a good season last year, and we weren't, you know, he didn't really contribute in the same way that he's contributing now. And we have spoken about maybe Goldie moving on has been a blessing for him because he just has the freedom to you know, come into his own and to play. Mm. But I mean, if, you know, that's one player that's turned a corner out of how many?
Yeah, absolutely. McKercher, I think he got involved and was decent enough. Awful disposal efficiency.
He will come good but though.
Yeah, look, I'm not blaming him at all. He went in the midfield a lot, which was really good to see.
And when he takes the ball into his hands and he runs,
yes,
he looks
it's exciting.
So exciting.
Moving him into the midfield is the right thing to do. I think I'm over all of these attackers off half back. Bailey Scott needs to go to the wing. McKercher needs to be in the guts. I know we don't love it, but let McDonald, let Sheasel, let the Fisher. That's enough. That's enough attacking, decent enough kicking players coming out of our defence. Get these guys forward to the ball. Move Sheasel into the middle more, you know, as well. Darcy Tucker was okay. I mean, it's probably his best game for the year, to be honest, but still underwhelming.
He just sort of exists.
Yeah, he kind of does.
And it's sad because I had such, I mean, everyone knows I had such high hopes for him going into the season. But it's unfortunately, Tucker Watch has sort of fallen flat pretty early on.
Yeah, yes, there's a lot of things that have fallen flat. and I guess the last thing we'll speak about in this segment before we play some of your voicemails is Tom Powell. 15 tackles for Tom Powell, which is a phenomenal stat. He actually tagged... who's their good player? Lachie Neal.
Not soon enough, but yes, he did.
But and Tom Powell shouldn't be tagging. Old mate, Alistair Clarkson said in the interview after the game that, you know, Powell wasn't having it. No midfielder was having a good game in the first half. The whole team didn't. And he decided to move Powell onto Lachie Neal to learn.
Yeah.
Which I think hopefully is good for him. But, 15 tackles is phenomenal and he tried
Tom
his heart
Powell's
out.
Tom Powell's had a very, very good start to the season.
It was probably his most underwhelming game to watch, but yeah, the tagging role and 15 tackles is
I think he'll be better for it in the long run, that game.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
All right, that's enough on some players. We'll play some – we got to talk about Jane Stevenson, don't we? We may – look, really, really quickly.
I don't have anything to say.
I don't know if – I don't think he was as bad as – he's a bit of a scapegoat, and I'm not saying before everyone gets in my DMs because I know how this stuff goes these days. I'm not saying that he was good. I don't think he's as bad as everyone thinks he is. I don't think he's good.
We just don't get enough from him.
But we don't get enough from
That's
him.
That's the problem.
His work rate is decent enough. I think he seems to get around the ball a bit. He just needs to make more impact when he's around the ball. So, look, if he gets dropped, I think that's fair. If he doesn't, okay, but he's got to be on thin ice.
It's players just taking ownership. And, I mean, these guys aren't in their first and second seasons anymore. You know, they've been in the system for a few years.
For someone who was speaking about wanting to be a leader more in the off season, I haven't seen that at all. So
it's a very good summary.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to go to some of your voice messages now.
Thank you to everyone who was brave enough, by the way, to send us your thoughts from yesterday's game.
Yeah. We love it. No, we love it. And it's good to get everyone's voice heard as well because we're all feeling it and I would like the podcast to be an outlet for people to get their voice heard and feel like they're acknowledged.
Yes, definitely.
We will come back with more team chat than individual players.
We kick them to the left, we kick them to the right. Way, we can't kick for shite.
North Melbourne should stop giving out hats and scarves and Roo Shop vouchers. They should give every member a therapy session for free every week when we lose, because I've had a gutful. I've had enough. We get pants week after week and, oh, yeah, there's improvement, but nothing changes.
Please tell me why Jai Simpkin and Al Mack are our captains when they play like that every week. Aiden and Cor better not get a game next week, Soz. Sellers needs to come in, and Chom and Greenwood were really good today, and that McKercher run was so good.
Nick Larkey needs to stop playing for the free and just take a mark.
Like, we haven't seen North not finish in the bottom four for so long, and we're literally so sick of it.
Can we please just get good soon? Go, Roos!
Chom was massive. Zach Fisher just gives it straight back to the opposition. WTF. Josh, it's starting to feel like we're in a very, very big hole and we may never, ever get out.
Yeah, look, that was shitful. Really poor in so many ways, but negatives are no fun. And let's focus on was almost the only positive, other than X, probably, was Mr. Chom. Didn't he just go Chom, Chom, Chom in the fourth, intercept mark after intercept mark? The man was on fire. Love him.
Okay, so some team stats that I've written down here,
yeah.
The ones that stood out to me. We've gone through the disposal efficiency already. This was our best game as a team, inside 50 efficiency.
That is frightful.
Yes, 41.9%. That was our best game. I'm so shook because I've looked at this every week and I think it's always been in the 30s. That was our best inside forward 50 disposal efficiency game of the entire season, which is absolutely terrifying because
we had 12 scoring shots and 6 goals for the game.
Oof. Yeah, wow. Yeah, thanks, Marnie. Really bring the mood down. The mark differential, 94 to 69 marks.
Well, they just controlled the football.
They did.
I want to know how many of those 94 marks were on the back of our turnover.
A lot too from many. Bailey Scott, that's for sure.
Yeah, coming but out of that.
Yeah, no, 100%. I don't understand how the team doesn't like shift out of zone and go more man on man when that starts to happen. Like taking accountability for your guy. I know it's modern football and I'm going very like state league or like local footy mentality here, but
just change it up a little
bit. There's got to be a little bit of back to basics with this.
Well, it's becoming too predictable.
Yeah.
I mean, as you said, Dan Brereton actually literally predicted what was going to happen before it even happened.
Multiple times.
So that's a big, big, big problem.
Absolutely.
For me. And I think that, yeah, we're becoming too predictable. And for a team that's, you know, looking to improve, we can't be that easy to beat on predictability and
100%. Well, we didn't show anything new in this game. We all the things that we've done poorly over the season so far, we did poorly for longer in that game.
Yeah.
22 to 4 marks inside 50.
Our delivery inside 50 is one of the biggest issues that we've got.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. 22 marks. Like it's interesting watching these games because Brisbane are in awful form. And they weren't delivering it really efficiently into their 50. They were just bombing it long.
Well, we won the disposal efficiency yesterday.
Yeah, like that's wild.
Yeah.
Carlton did the same thing. Carlton weren't spearing the ball onto their forwards' chests. They just knew they could take the easy way out, lump it forward, and Cherno and Mackay would do the rest.
Yeah.
Just like Hipwood and Danaher did yesterday.
Yeah.
We did win the tackle count. Now, granted, we barely had the ball, so we had to. But 81 to 62 tackles, I think, is a decent enough effort. 81 tackles is a lot in a game. So
it is a lot in a game. I'm curious of the split between the first half and the second half. I don't know if that's
not a lot of those would have been in the first.
We could look at
any stat boffins out there.
Please let us know because you wouldn't have known that we won that tackle count unless you're really looking back on it, like to the naked eye.
Yeah.
Maybe in the second half we obviously evened things up a little bit. But again, it's like why are we only capable of doing this for a half of football?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, I guess we'll come to that a little bit when we talk a bit more positively about the team. But
yeah.
I've got a laughing face emoji at the end of this one. We improved by 5 points over the result last year.
At the top of the show. That's
very depressing and fantastic at the same time.
A 70 instead of a 75 point loss. That is something we're really to get excited about, guys.
I guess they're basically the main stats, like team stats, that I sort of wanted to talk about. Let's spin this a little bit more positively, I guess, and the way I'm trying to look at it. So
yeah.
on one side of things, our effort hasn't been good enough. I think as a fan base, we all thought we'd be better than we are right now.
Yeah.
It feels very 2022 right now. But when I sort of take a step back and look at this, I'm not really sure why. Like, we are – I think it's – the only way I can justify it in my head is because it's been so long since we've had any success or improvement.
Yeah.
Now it feels already like another year that we're not going to improve the whole time. Now, do we know if that's going to happen or not? No, we don't, because it's only four games in. So the way I'm thinking about it is we're four games in.
Yeah.
Our first 5 weeks of the season are arguably the hardest in the league.
Yeah.
Now, we've had Giants a pretty in round rough one.
Start yep. the year.
Giants in round one away, who I'd say we would all say are the best team in the league.
Yeah, for sure.
Fremantle round two, who I thought was winnable, but turns out they haven't lost a game and look really, really good.
We're recording this before they play Carlton, by the way. Yes, so we don't know how that game's going to go. Going into Gather Round, they were undefeated.
Absolutely. Carlton, who are one of the premiership favourites, the lids off, as we know. A Brisbane Lion team who, yes, hadn't won games, but we're away from home at a weird ground with straight sidelines, which is weird.
Yeah.
And they needed to they've got premiership quality players. That is the same team as last year. So
they would have looked at us and thought this is our chance to really kickstart our season. Yep.
And then next week we go down to Geelong to play an undefeated Cats team.
And no matter where Geelong is sitting on the ladder, that is never an easy task.
Spoiler alert, I think next week will be our biggest loss of the season so far. But
can't wait.
We'll get into that in the preview podcast. So look, those are some points there I think we can hold on to, which we haven't played Richmond and Adelaide and Hawthorn and West Coast. We play Hawthorn twice, we play West Coast twice. You know, do I right now believe we can beat West Coast? Not really. Can we? Yes. But if we lose, will I be shocked? Not really. Not how I feel right now. The Hawthorn game in round six is – people like to talk about that being our grand final on Good Friday. No, round six is our grand final. If we don't win that Hawthorn game, Marnie, I think we're on for two wins. That's how it will feel. Does that mean that that will happen? No. That is the most important game of our season. I think round six is going to dictate how the rest of our season goes. If we win that game, I think the fan base and the players will get the belief that we can beat the Adelaides, the Richmonds, the Eagles, the Hawks, those sort of teams, and maybe an upset to an Essendon or something who looked rubbish yesterday, which was very funny.
Yeah.
But if we don't win that Hawks game, I don't believe that this group won't drop their heads. I think individuals like Hugh, Chom, you know, Wardlaw, Sheezel, Larky. I trust that they're gonna be able to try, and Jai as well. I'll back him in. I just think that's so. This is the most important game that we've played in years, I reckon.
We just need to find a way to fire up, though. Like, we can't. We played Hawthorn in that second game. So we played them in Tassie the first game. I think we lost by 3 goals. But that second game we played against Hawthorn last season at Marvel Stadium was the most disappointing performance of that season.
100%.
Even more disappointing than the West Coast loss over in Perth, right?
That's tough, but yeah.
Because I think we were so who do we think we are going into that game and thinking, oh yeah, we could probably just take the 4 points and run. I think way too many people on and off field went into that game with that mindset.
Mm.
It's insane to me. Yeah. We've been so bad for so long, and yes, we've shown good signs, you know, parts of this season and parts of last season. Yeah. I think we'll work our way into the season, and I agree. I think in the second half of the year particularly we'll give some sides some trouble. But we need to start believing that we actually
how do you feel
can match teams. I think we went into that game, and like I said before, I don't think we gave ourselves a chance, to be honest.
No.
And I don't know if we're going to give ourselves a chance next week on the back of that loss.
No,
but we can't do that. We can't – and I don't – people laugh, okay? People laugh about North Ball. People laugh about the Essendon Edge. People laugh about Brendan Gale saying that Richmond will win three flags in 10 years. But you need something to believe in, because what the hell is the point? Coming week in, week out and showing up if you have nothing to believe in.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, and I think you're right. The team doesn't seem like it has something to believe in.
People can laugh at it. I don't care, okay? People can laugh. People can mock fun at it. Do what you want. But as a North supporter, I would rather people mock us for believing in North Ball and believing that that type of game is exciting and will challenge the best teams in the competition than us not having anything to believe in whatsoever and not actually thinking that we can do it in the first place.
No, I agree. It's similar, I mean, to a similar scenario was like when we went to get Dustin Martin and people laughed at us. But I would much rather, and I said at the time, I would much rather a team that goes for those players than just goes, oh, we won't get him anyway. And that's the same right now. Speaking of North Ball, we are the slowest moving team that wants to play fast I think I've ever seen. Every single time someone gets a mark, well, this is meant to be the positive section too. every single time someone gets a mark on our team, we stop and we go,
I think with fitness it'll come. But there's
no options. There's no, like, the amount of times that Brisbane have the ball and they kick it out of frame and the next camera angle has another lion standing in an acre of space.
We're very stagnant.
We had no time on the ball yesterday. We didn't have any open players to handball to relieve any pressure, and that's why it got turned over
We're very stagnant, and that has been another issue we've had for many years.
We need to, like, not, like, I like the idea of North Ball. North Ball doesn't work with this list. North Ball does not work with the players that we've got. We need to focus on playing defensively. We need to focus on not trying to move the ball as quickly. If we try and move it quickly, but have an eye on the defense and don't just go, oh, look, let's keep trying because it'll work one day.
Do you know when it'll work? It'll work when we start playing as a team and as one.
Yeah.
The best teams, the best sporting teams in any code are always communicating. They're always talking. They're all, you know, they're in sync with each other. Hugh Greenwood doesn't shut up the whole game.
Yeah.
And that's what everyone needs to do. Everyone needs to be constantly communicating and working together in our favour.
Mm.
North Ball can work because we've seen it.
Yeah.
There was a few passages of play even last week. We have patches. Carlton that was fantastic.
And even the way we started the third against the Lions.
And, you know, we keep chipping it away at it. It'll be good. But we just need to start. It comes back to that. It's a team and we need to work as one rather than people, individuals just in it for themselves.
Yeah.
And I don't think that – I don't want to bag LDU or Zerha for taking – because I think it's a positive thing actually. They're taking responsibility.
There's two sides to it.
Yeah, and I think that they're trying to do something and trying to create something which is great and that's what we want. But we need them to bring the rest of the team along with them.
I couldn't have said that better. Actually, yeah, you're right. They're leading individually, but they need to find a way to bring the guys with them because you know there's a lot of things where you know our leadership group with Simkin and screw Aiden Court. I'm not talking about him anymore. But like you know, like LDU's and Zerha's, even though they're not in the leadership group per se, these are the best players who aren't kids.
Yeah,
and they need to do it, and I don't know if they can, but. You're right, like they're doing it individually, but they need to bring the team with them and I don't know if they're capable of that.
So on that, and we've had a day to sort of think about it and reflect, and how are you now feeling? We're four rounds into the season. How are you feeling overall?
Overall, so there's two ways that I'm looking at this. Right now, genuinely rubbish. Like this feels like 2022 to me right now and I don't really know why because – I understand that we've had a shocking run. We've played – probably every team we've played is going to be in the finals. And we've barely – until yesterday, we didn't play a team that had lost a game and the Cats will probably win this week again and they're undefeated going down to their place. So it's very, very hard start. I feel like the lack of effort or the lack of improvement so far in the first four rounds is evident. And we are excited about this offensive game plan, but if we lose that much defense playing it, I don't want to play that style anymore.
Yeah.
I think that's the way I feel about it. I want to be able to attack, but we need to start focusing on defense. And this is sort of where I wanted to go with it. As a long-term view, I'm not wavering for one second that we will be good one day. And I know that we will get there. We have the right coach in charge. This is the first week I've seen some people starting to question Clarkson. And I don't think that's unfair because the way the team's playing, how can you not ask questions? But I think the disappointing thing this year for us, and you can tell me if you agree with this, is I wanted more. I wanted more from the team. We're not getting it. And I need to see changes and more change happen. Chom and Greenwood coming in was good, but I need to see more from this team. We haven't felt like we've improved. I believe in the long-term plan. I think we're going to get there. But the thing that's changed in my head is in 2 years' time, we are not going to be there. We're not.
Yeah.
This 2 to 3 year time thing, no. That's not – it's not. And that's – and that it's okay and it's not okay. The hard thing is that when Clarkson came in, that's year one of this rebuild. As a fan base, I don't blame anyone for being angry that we had 4 years before that of not draft – just awful rubbish. Drafts, awful yeah. – look at every signing like Core and Coleman Jones and these guys are all signed before we got Alistair Clarkson here.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this is harsh, we need to ride out those contracts and get rid of them.
Yeah.
We need to move on and we need to look at the – like Fisher, I know maybe hasn't had the stellar start we were hoping, but I believe he's going to fit this team, be a good player. Dylan Stephens is similar, but I guess I don't know if Dylan Stephens is going to work out, but I understood what Clarkson was trying to do with a gaping hole on that left wing. Yeah. And at least there's structure and there seems to be some sort of plan involved. I wish the fans were more involved with the plan or knowing where we're at. I guess to end my rant before you can have your go is I believe we will be good one day.
Yeah.
But I think we're looking at 5 years minimum. Yeah. I think we're a lot further back than we were hoping this year and that's why the fan base is angry. Not because of necessarily the on-field performance. Yes, that is true, but we've played some really hard teams. I just think it's because we all thought we'd be better than this right now and it's all sinking in that we are not going to get to where we want to be within 2 or 3 years.
I don't know where we'll be in terms of a timeline. I know two things though. I know that things can turn really quickly and we had Jazz and Hannah on to help preview the Good Friday game and, you know, they both said that, you know, things turned for them really quickly.
But it was 10 years.
I don't want to wait 10 years. I don't want to
wait. It was even more like...
Say 20 years for things to turn.
Like the, what, they played one final in 20 years or something like that?
Like that isn't quick
when
to
they
me.
Had Judd, yeah. And they didn't even made the finals because of Essendon. Doing horse tranks.
Man. So, whoop-de-doo.
You know, like, but this is it. Like, I think we say it can turn quickly way too much. It can also not. Like, you know, how many, the Bulldogs got their premiership, but like they've been pretty irrelevant before and after that.
My main emotion is I'm sad.
Yeah.
I think
it's not fun.
It's not fun. And I think I'm sad because I've been following this club for 20 odd years. And I love this club mm-hmm. with all my heart. And the only thing that made me more upset about losing that game yesterday and the way we lost it is the fact that I wasn't there to support them through it. Now, that is a very... Maybe it's if this is a relationship, it'd be a very toxic mindset to have.
Oh, well.
But I think that
we're in a toxic relationship with North Melbourne.
But what makes me sad is to know that there are a lot of fans who are as supportive and as diehard as I am, who have supported the club longer than I have, who are starting to lose faith and are starting to turn their back. Now, a lot of people have reached out to me over the last 24 hours and say, don't lose the faith and don't give up. Trust me, you don't know me well enough if you think that's an issue. Because that is definitely,
will never lose faith.
I will ride this club until I'm black and blue in the face and I will stand by them, you know, through absolutely everything. But it makes me upset to think that there are people who might be like me who are sort of starting to question
club. I completely agree with that. That is sad, but I don't blame them for
I
a
also,
second.
And I was going to say, but I actually, I don't blame them.
It's on North Melbourne. We can back North Melbourne, but North Melbourne also need to give us reasons to keep backing them.
And
what that is showing us improvement. All we want is improvement. We're not saying make the finals this year, make the finals next year. We will back this team. But you need
Well, that's what made yesterday so hard to watch, is not because we got killed by 12 goals. I've seen us get killed by worse. I've seen us perform worse.
Yeah.
It's the fact that I'm sitting there and I'm not questioning if we're good enough or not. I'm questioning if we care.
Yeah.
Because I know that as a fan, I care. As a supporter and a member, I really care. And I know that these guys are – they, you know, they don't not necessarily growing up supporting North, and I get that, and this is their job rather than their, but it's
you know what,
it's not a normal job.
No, you're paid to care. You're paid.
It's your livelihood, yeah. And you spend so
it's
much.
It's a family
time,
for them as well.
You spend so much time together during the week, and these are your, you know,
especially a club like North Melbourne, which is very family orientated, community orientated, and
we're
you're
small,
part of something bigger than just turning up at the Pies ground and getting paid a lot and using some shiny weights, then going home.
And I just, like, I'd never ever want to sit there again and question, do you give a shit?
Yeah.
Because that to me, that is the worrying thing for me. Like I said at the top of the show, it's not are we good enough, because I know that we're not good enough to beat Brisbane, probably.
Yeah.
We're probably not good enough to beat Geelong.
No.
But if we don't throw everything we've got at them, and if we don't rock up and at least have a genuine crack, we're never going to know if we're good enough.
Yeah.
And we're never actually ever going to be good enough to win these games.
Yeah, and look at West Coast today. Like they just played the Swans and they lost in the end, but they were winning at half time.
Yeah.
Why are they're fighting? Where did ours go? We fought against the Giants. We had one bad quarter, but I thought our effort was good in against Fremantle. The effort was there against Carlton, but yesterday after like the third quarter, yeah, it was there, but you can't come out in the first half and have the most disappointing half of football. Look, I want to say since David Noble era, I guess the D's last year and the Lions last year are probably ones you can point to like that, but you're right, like it's a club like North needs to connect with the fans, and the way to do that and the way to keep us supporting, believing and backing you is
validating our feelings.
Yeah, and no, like that's what Chom's interview
yes,
was.
Yes, 100%. I want
–
I don't – like, yeah, okay, I understand. You need to try and find a shining light where you can, because – you know, if you love the club and you are committed to the club, then you do need to try and find ways to get through the darkness. But I also want my feelings to be validated. I don't want someone to sit, to turn around to me on Monday morning and say, you being angry about our performances during a rebuild aren't validated. They are absolutely validated.
Yeah, and these are the two sides of what I sort of said before, is like we're a long way off being where we think we're going to be. Anyone who thought we'd be 10th to 12th this year, next year, or even the year after, you need to like really set your expectations differently for this place. Not like if we explode next year and I look like a fool saying that, I love it because I want them to be that good. But, you know, we need to accept and understand that we are very bad and it's going to be like that for a while. But it is part of a process for bigger things that I think we'll get to.
If it
takes longer to set up, we're also setting our club up for sustainability.
Yeah.
Not like last time where we get Waite and Higgins and Dos Santos. Higgins may be different. He was there for a long time and was great for us. But, you know, we look how we dropped off after 2007, 8, 9 sort of era when we were very good, and then we built back up, we ran at it, and then we died after that.
Yeah.
We need to be setting ourselves up like Geelong, which is the model that that everyone should need to do.
It's
like
a breeding
Swans.
Ground for success.
Yeah, that they rotate consistently. Rotate players through their team, and the culture is great, and we need to be able to sustain success. We don't want to be dropping down this low, then making a prelim, then dropping down this low all the time. That's not what we need. So, look, I think
I just want to say one more thing, and then we'll probably go on to the Sean Attlee
champ.
It's really hard at the moment, and I completely echo how everyone is feeling. Josh and I are both, obviously we do this podcast every single week. We want to try and, you know, echo how you guys feel. Don't give up on the club, because that is going to kill us in the end. We play Geelong in Geelong next week. If you can get there, get there. But we play Hawthorn the following week. It's a shit slot. It's Sunday at 4 o'clock.
But it shouldn't matter what the slot is. This
just
is
get there.
Yeah, this is a game that we can win. And this needs to be like a grand final for us. This needs to be the game. I don't care if anyone's, oh, it's at a bad time slot. If you want to see, if you care about this team and you can get to the game and you want to see us win, you will be at this game. Because I don't know if we will win, because the way we've played yesterday doesn't give me the faith. But I hate Hawthorn so much, Marnie. You have no idea. And you have no idea how much I want to beat this rubbish club. So this is the most important game of our entire season, maybe for the whole thing, because if we do get to the 5-6 win mark, it's because we win this game. If we don't win this game, I don't think we can get there. But Marnie's right. Don't give up on it. But this is the – like, I've basically – and this is something you'll hate – I've basically written off next week. Whatever. Like, go into that game and go, we know how the Hawks play. Let's execute everything we know that can tear the Hawks apart and perfect it against a really good team in Geelong. Let's go and try and fix a couple of little issues on the defensive end. Whatever happens, happens in that game, because we're not winning against the Cats. But the Hawks game is absolutely a winnable one, and we need to go in there and try and absolutely destroy that team. And if you can get there, get there. Don't give up on the club. But
don't,
like,
underestimate the difference that you can have to this club and its success in both the short term and the long term.
Well, that's what Charlie said to us at the live show as well, about how important the support is, and even like the podcast and the Close to a Flag guys, you know, getting behind it and keeping the audience interested and being able to have him on to talk in a different way that fans can engage with more.
Absolutely.
Because they do care. They do. And, you know, maybe some players more than others, and I don't know who that is and who that isn't, but, you know, like we've talked about, again, Chom's interview yesterday was one of the things that really got my head straight about this and sort of changed how I wanted to approach the podcast, because it's fantastic to see someone who can – who I believe with the facial expression, with the body language he showed in that interview, I believe what he was saying. And it echoes how we are feeling, and that validates how we feel.
And at the end of the day, none of us would be this upset – or this cut up if we didn't care.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
Take that care and channel it into next week against Geelong. If you can't make it to Geelong, then the following week against the Hawks, Bay 29 will be back. Make footy fun. I'm coming to sit in Bay 29 against Hawthorn, which is a very rare appearance, but I'll be making an appearance in
a
Bay
29. Celebrity
in
the Bay. All right, Sonia came into the Bay, who cares? Chom came into the Bay, Chom who? Marnie's going to be in the Bay.
Josh has been
gentlemen.
Badgering me in the Closer to a Flag guys. They've been badgering me for a while to come and sit there for a game. So I'm doing it against Hawthorn, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to just have a really great time, and, you know, all of us come together and throw our support behind the boys
and smash the shit out of the Hawks, because I hate the Hawks. I hate them so much. The most overrated club. I hate them. They were successful. Great. Who
cares?
And
if we win, we're going out and celebrating.
Yes. Yes.
I will lead that pack.
Everyone to Revs. I'll see you there. No, I'm not going to Revs. I'm nearly 30.
Please don't go to Revs.
I'm not going to Revs. Okay. There's our letter to North Melbourne, by the way. North Melbourne, if you're listening, we love you, and everything we said was out of the care and passion from our hearts.
Yes.
So please don't hate us, because we care a lot. So, Sean
Adder
Club
Champ. Let's bring this thing home, baby.
Now, we haven't talked about this previous to this podcast.
No, I just trusted you this week to make the right decision, and looking at it, it looks like you've made
I've
a
nailed
great.
It.
You have nailed it.
Three votes, Chom. Charlie Combin.
Definitely.
He's marking his effort all day. He's tackling, he's chasing. And that the interview. I mean, look, once again, to remind everybody, the Sean Attlee Club Champ is not like a Brownlow. It is about heart, North Melbourne, shin bonus spirit, effort. Stats do count, goals count. We take everything into consideration. But the heart that boy showed yesterday was fantastic, and he cannot possibly walk away with anything under three votes. Hugh Greenwood, your man.
My guy.
Our two boys. Yeah. Hugh Greenwood, once again, the effort and passion and sheer doggedness of him around contest was fantastic. And if half the team played with the energy and effort that he did, we would not have lost by that many points. He was great when he went into the middle. I do think if I'm going to throw not a criticism but like a Hugh Greenwood opinion, I don't think up forward is his place. I want him in the middle. I want him around the ball.
Trust me, I would love to see him in the middle more than anyone.
Yeah. I just – he was just – head over the ball. He's so strong. He uses his body so well. He was one of the only players I saw play a shepherd on the weekend as well, which is a dying art form. I found out you can't shepherd. It's illegal to shepherd in until you're like 12 years old at grassroots level.
Oh,
well,
there
now.
You go.
They literally, they don't allow you to shepherd, which is so concerning for the next generation of football. Anyway, there's my boomer moment. And Harry Sheezel gets the number one of number one. No, the one vote, which is the third spot. Very confusing with numbers. Who made this? Anyway, that was me. Harry Sheezel, what do you get? 35, 80% disposal efficiency. Just solid consistency in that back line. A 19-year-old being that calm and composed wasn't his best game. He turned the ball over a bit, but
it's nice though that we do have a player like him who we can actually rely on week in, week out.
If the ball's in his hands, I'm not too stressed.
Yeah, no, he's a gem.
Chom 3, Hugh 2, She's 1 vote in the Sean Antley Club Champ.
It's a nice looking 3-2-1 from this week.
So, yes, I bet you do think that, Marnie. So, I haven't updated the tally here, but so She's and Powell are both leading the leaderboard on 4. Chom is now jumped up straight to the middle with Chom, Curtis and Wardlaw are sitting on 3 votes. LDU 2, Callan Dawson 2, Tristan Sherry has 1. Hugh
Greenwood 2.
I hate this. It's definitely time to go. that's the leaderboard. You know, you guys know what it is. Whatever. I'll post it up through the week like we always do. Okay, that's probably enough for this week, I reckon. Thank you for listening to that heartfelt episode of the Further North podcast.
And thank you guys for tuning in every week. Someone I do want to shout out I know will be listening and is waiting for this. For those who don't know, I went on Blue Abroad before the Good Friday game with Terry. And we had a great preview on his show, and then he listened to our wrap of the Good Friday game last weekend and messaged me during the week and wanted to talk about the umpiring comments that we made and that every North supporter would have made following that game. He sent me a couple of stats. Since 2022, the two players who have kicked the most goals from free kicks are Cam Zerha and Nick Larkey, followed by Harry Mackay, should I add. And the player that's kicked the most goals from the least amount of free kicks is none other than Charlie Curno. So,
Ed Curno?
Charlie.
Oh, he's got a brother. Sorry,
yeah, that guy, remember?
Yeah, I didn't know.
That one who tore us to pieces last weekend. Yeah. How could you forget?
Yes. I was in my feelings a little bit last. I said Carlton fans suck basically last week, and I didn't mean that. Terry, I apologise. I was just emotional after the game. look, interesting coming with stats. Very prepared man. Very smart man.
He's a very, very clever man, and he's doing pretty amazing things. So, Terry, we know you're listening, and we wanted to apologise.
We'll get you next year though, Terry.
I want to apologise on behalf of Josh because everyone knows I'm totally on board the Carlton thing.
I'm not.
Josh is not, but that's okay.
Look, it's not like – no, look, I'll explain my Carlton thing quickly. I don't dislike Carlton as a club. I hope we can replicate something that they have done. The fans are just another level of chaos. They're, in my opinion, crazier than Collingwood fans have ever been, maybe equaling what I thought Richmond was at the time. I just know a lot of Carlton fans, and I think there's a lot of things that Carlton need to prove, and they haven't done it yet. So,
well, I just know that I would be exactly the same as Carlton fans, if not more insufferable.
I'm not like you, Marnie.
When we get there,
I'm the pessimist.
I'm leaning into my love for Carlton, and I'm enjoying what they're, you know, what they're bringing to the table, and I'm enjoying it for their fans.
Good on Carlton. Look, if I don't really want Carlton to win it personally, but I respect where they're at. They've done really well. Good on the fans for sticking with them for that long of a time, being very average, even though they had Judd and Fev. But good on them.
I think we can all
deserve
learn
happiness,
and we can all learn something from them.
Yes, and we envy where you're at right now, and hope to be there one day too. One thing I will say about Carlton fans in a positive light is there was multiple Carlton fans this week who did come into the barbershop and praise North's attacking side of the ball and say that. When they were in like 2017, 16, 17 Carlton, they didn't have that level of attacking threat This was a Carlton fan that comes in all the time to work. So this was not me making this up, but he was impressed with the way we played and said, look, you are on the right track. I've seen it happen and stay strong, which was nice from the Carlton fan.
Thank you to that Carlton fan who visited Josh during the week.
There was actually two or three that said a very similar thing. And I didn't bring it up. I didn't bring it up. They brought it up.
And so thank you to Terry for sending me those stats during the week. And we apologise we sort of apologise for our rant.
Yes, yeah, I apologise for saying Carlton fans are bad. I did not mean that. But
okay, too much Carlton chat for an
Well,
podcast.
Look, the last thing I'll say, Marnie, is that I appreciate Terry coming with the stats. Doesn't mean that any of our opinion from the game was wrong individually. I think the umpiring was woeful and very favourable to Carlton, kicking 48 points directly from free kicks and getting 6 50-metre penalties. Don't know if I've seen a whole game with 6, let alone one team. But they would have won anyway, so who cares at the end of the day. But Terry, we love you.
We love you, Terry.
You're a very special boy.
Thank you to everyone for sending in their voice notes as well and for, you know, tuning in, week out. We hope that we can provide a good outlet for you guys to get through what's been a pretty difficult start to the season. But hang in there. The tide will turn. And we're looking forward to hopefully jumping on in the next couple of weeks and being able to celebrate a win.
We're looking
everyone.
Forward to smashing the Hawks, Marnie. We're going to absolutely tear them apart. And then we're going to Revs.
And then we're going to give you the most unhinged Further North episode you will ever experience.
We'll do it from Revs, the Revs bathrooms.
I'm worried. Oh, I'm worried for our sanity. You can follow us on socials. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok and YouTube. Hi, YouTube. Thank you so much for anyone who's watching on YouTube. Further North Pod. You can send in all your voice messages at the end of every game, furthernorthpod@gmail.com. Mm. Josh and I are always up for a chat during the week. Share your thoughts with us throughout the game, throughout the week. Yes. And if we don't see you in Geelong next weekend, then we will see you on the preview pod and the review pod.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, I can really tell.
I'm just trying to focus on the Hawks, Marnie, because I don't like what's going to happen.
In Josh's mind, the game against Geelong isn't actually happening.
No, it doesn't exist. Stop. Let's just talk about that Hawthorn game in a few weeks. Okay, Hawthorn's the next game we play, guys. We will see you after the Hawthorn game.
Josh has gone mad. I think it's time we go.
Yeah, I'm going to go home. We're at my house.
We're at your house, yeah.
Okay, see you guys. I need to go and lay down.
Bye, guys. Bye. Have a nice week. Goodbye. Go North. Keep the faith.
We're going to smash Hawthorn.
Was absolutely pathetic. How much more of these performances can we take?
Hey, Josh. Hey, Marnie. I just thought that game was fully horrible. Zerha needs to go too many turnovers and I think Comden is a waste in the back line, even though we need him there, but we also need another big tall forward, so get Sellers in. Zerha's doing absolutely nothing, so get him out.
Charlie Comden, that is all. One piece of the puzzle complete.
Hey guys, it's Nick Walters, long-time listener, first-time caller. It's fair to say everyone should marry a North Melbourne supporter because you just know they're going to remain loyal to you forever. Rough times now, but you can see what we're trying to build on as a football team. Mark, handball and run. Unfortunately, quite right now, we don't have the tank for it. But stick fat North fans, it's going to be a rocky ride, but we'll get there. Hashtag free room.
Turned it off at quarter time. Couldn't watch it anymore. Went for a walk with my son and wife and we played a little bit of basketball down at the local park. Even they beat me at basketball, but I felt like I was in it the whole time. Felt like I could still be in the game. Unlike North Melbourne, we were never in it. We were done. Done before quarter time. What rubbish.
At Cozzy 23, I think our defenders should all play up forward as their ability to lose their opponents would result in us dominating the game.